If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house. But I love eating people. I love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah. But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. Seen a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree?
Welcome back! Season 7 finale, part 3. I am the great and powerful mystery.
And I'm J-Clone 779.
Woo!
Wonder if that got picked up.
Woo! He slapped himself.
Not that hard.
No,
so I was about to, and then I realized.
Are you enjoying the season finale?
Yeah.
Just so everybody knows. I mean,
last week, when we were in here talking about these tree kangaroos and whatnot, I got pretty excited.
Today, we're going to talk about the Antimaba. The Antimaba.
Antimaba. Oh, I'm J-Clone 779. Did I already say that? Oh, the slap, maybe if.
Gave yourself a concussion.
Yeah.
I gave myself a concussion last weekend.
Oh, yeah.
I really did. Yes, the Antimaba.
Antimaba.
Yeah. So the Antimaba is a cryptid from?
Well, you're supposed to tell me where it's from. I got to get my plane ticket, remember?
Madagascar.
Okay. Swimming over to Madagascar. Or flying, whatever.
Swimming. That's a long swim.
Oh, yeah, because we were just in back in Papua New Guinea for the tree kangaroos. So, yes, it is quite the swim.
So
the Indian Ocean.
I guess, yeah, you just got to go through the Indian Ocean. It's not that far.
I could stop in Sri Lanka.
A couple thousand miles.
Adam's Bridge, I think is what it's called.
Sri Lanka. That's one of my dream destinations.
Sri Lanka?
Yes.
Of all places in the world?
Yeah, it's one of the most biodiverse places on the planet.
Wow. Okay. I thought Tennessee was.
Tennessee is.
Oh, you're right. It is. Fun fact. Season, like, 2, 3, 4 reference.
I have no idea. The Antimaba is a cryptid reported from Madagascar. It is allegedly a large cat-like predator. In his work, Historia de la Grande Islas de Madagascar, which is a 1658 book, a French governor of Madagascar, Admiral, Etima de Falcourt.
Oh, so it's named after him, right?
What?
What was his first name?
Admiral Etima.
Okay.
I guess it is kind of spelled similar. It's an E, not an A.
Oh, okay. It sounded similar.
It is. I mean, it is kind of spelled similar. Recorded sporadically accurate descriptions of a number of Malagasy animals.
Okay.
So you remember some of our other Malagasy animals that we've talked about?
I do remember one specifically, but I hope this ain't it.
Which is?
The fossa? Fossa?
Fusa.
The fusa.
I was thinking more of the pygmy hippos. Remember, they're still looking for them. Because they just went extinct.
That's right.
Within the last like 150 years.
Yeah.
But Forrest Galante's out there, and he found bones of one they estimated like 60 or 70 years old.
Yeah.
That means that they at least didn't go extinct when they said they went extinct.
Yeah.
And Madagascar, we've talked about the whole half of Madagascar has nobody living in it.
Yep. If you guys haven't listened to apps, is that a Patreon episode or no? I don't think it is. I think it's I forget.
Oh, no, it is a Patreon because it gets gross. Oh,
okay. Yeah, it's a Patreon episode.
The Madagascar living trees.
Break down the top topography of Madagascar, the whole island.
It's very unique.
And half of it, yeah, there's nobody living on half of it because it's almost impossible to live on.
It's death rainforest.
Yeah, basically. It's like the Congo.
Or I was going to say like that Australian rainforest where half of the trees are poisonous.
So you touch them, you will not last long.
So he just recorded a bunch of the accurate descriptions of Malagasy animals. That's one of his passion projects.
Okay.
We're going and like recording all the, he was, like I said, a French governor over Madagascar. And I think the French still have control over Madagascar.
That's crazy.
I think they do, but I may be wrong.
That'd be like if Ohio still had
control over like
the UP.
Oh, that would be better. including three now often identified with subfossil species. So he recorded three things. The Tartara.
Okay.
The Vopa Rata. And the Antimaba.
And that's the one we're talking about.
Yes. So the Madagascar Antimaba is an animal as large as a dog with a round head. And according to the relations of, I'm not going to read the word. He used a very rough word for black people.
Oh, okay.
1658.
1738. Oh, wait, that's his song.
I'm like, 1658. Don't confuse me. I'm dyslexic. But he uses very colorful words. But he's, according to the local people, they resemble a leopard. It devours both men and cattle. It is only found in the deserted parts of the islands. And it means deserted.
Okay.
So where no people live.
The deserted.
They don't
parts
like living
that.
Near people. But if you get too close to them, they eat cattle, humans. So unlike the Vorpamapa and the Tartara, the Antimaba continued to be reported long after Falcourt's time. So the other two species, the other two cryptids, we don't know if they were just near extinction when he was out there, or if they wiped them all out from the inhabited parts.
Okay.
Because this creature even was starting to pull back itself. The Antimaba was starting to pull back away from the inhabited parts of the island.
Right.
And even today, they do not like being around the inhabited parts of the island.
Hmm.
But they are quite capable, especially in Falcourt's time, of killing humans and cattle.
Okay.
In 1883, though, Malagasy folklore compeller James Scribe found it difficult to say whether the Antimaba is a mythical creature or a real one that exists.
Still having the difficulty, huh?
Like 200 years later. Although he felt it was very like a...
I don't know, a weasel?
Fusa.
Oh, okay. Hey, I was right.
During the 1930s, French hunter Paul Sazard received reports of giant cave-dwelling lions existing in remote parts of the island. They were both killing livestock and people.
Okay.
Dale A. Dorma associated these stories with the Antimaba by Marcus Blur, confessed that considering Malagasy cats to be a typical alien big cat. Yeah, so there's no cats in Madagascar. Okay. Malagasy is just what it's called.
Yeah, okay.
Like a Malagasy animal. And at the end of the 20th century, Fusa specialist Luke Dollar heard president rumors of the Antimaba, promoting him to lead an unsuccessful expedition to the Zimbabwean National Park in search in November of 1999. So the Antimoeba is still being seen to this day. And it's basically described as a giant Fusa.
Oh, okay.
For anybody that hasn't listened to our Fusa episode, they're like small dog sized.
And they're in the weasel family, right? Or the
closer related to hyenas.
Oh, it's hyena?
Yeah.
Okay, what am I thinking of?
Like no, they're weasel-like.
Weasel-like, that's what it was. And that's on Freaky Fauna Friday, and it's spelled F-O-S-S-A.
F-O-S-S-A, yep.
Yeah. It's a weird.
Despite the beliefs by some early zoologists that the Antimoeba was a genuine leopard, cryptozoologists and a handful of mainstream zoologists identify it as a puma-like giant Fusa.
Okay.
So there's been no fossil evidence of any other giant big cats, like an actual cat.
Right. Feline.
There's none on Madagascar.
Okay.
Hippos are one of the exceptions because they think they swam there.
Hippos?
Hippos in Madagascar?
Yeah.
The pygmy hippos?
Yeah.
But there's not many main African species
on
Madagascar.
Understood. Hippos are the main exception.
I
thought I was still on cats.
No, because
like, what hippo?
Because there are leopards.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yep.
In Africa.
Right,
It's hundreds of miles of ocean. It's not like it's close.
No, it's not just a hop, skip, and a jump.
But there used to be a giant, basically, inland sandbar sea.
Mm.
So if you could walk along the bottom and jump up to breathe, it's a lot easier than trying to swim across it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they think that's how they got there. But yeah, so they think it was a puma-like giant Fusa.
That's interesting.
So this, I mean, they're still seeing Antimoeba here and there. And they're early
on.
Oh,
we still see them?
Yeah, like, yeah, they're still
sightings. Are there pictures of them?
No.
Oh, so they're that secretive.
They're very rare.
We know they're rare.
They're on the other side of the island most. So the Antimoeba used to mean both the small Fusa. So the Fusa is the one example.
Yeah.
Where the Antimoeba had two sizes in the early days.
Okay.
So between 1658 to later on, when it was 200 years later, they discovered the Fusa.
Okay.
The small Fusa. So they're like, well, the Antimoeba is a Fusa, which is a giant Fusa.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, when it was Falcor's court, it was still both the normal Fusa and the giant Fusa were the Antimoeba.
Okay. Like how we did in the last episode with the colossal squid and the giant squid, both the Kraken.
Where there was a giant Antimoeba and a baby Antimoeba.
Or that. Antimoeba. Yeah.
So now it's just one. Where they're like, yeah, it's a Fusa, and then there's a giant Fusa.
Gotcha.
And all the natives that see him and stuff like that are like, it's a leopard-sized Fusa.
Which, is that possible for the Fusa to...
Not the Fusa themselves. They are very small animals.
I mean, but one...
Like under 20 pounds.
Couldn't one just, like, break
get
the mold?
300 pounds?
You know, island gigantism. Doesn't that happen on islands?
I think they had island dwarfism.
Ah, okay.
I think they went the other way.
See, maybe it's an old one then. It's just hung on.
But a fossil discovery on Madagascar proved that there may still be some stuff. Because in the Holocene, guess what lived on Madagascar? Gorilla-sized lemurs and giant Fusa.
Wow. Okay.
Which is literally the only other species of Fusa. It was a subfossil remains, which means they weren't even fully fossilized. They were that new.
Okay.
Of giant Fusa from the Holocene. Aside from dollars, some Fusa workers remained open to the possibility of a second species of Fusa still existing to this day in Madagascar. Citing that the one that they know about is still so secretive and rare, the populations they study have become habituated to people.
Okay.
So they can't just go in and find a wild Fusa somewhere.
Right, yeah.
They can find the signs of them and stuff like that. So a lot of Fusa researchers are really comfortable in the idea of there being a second species of Fusa that's a giant, rarer Fusa.
Gotcha.
An apex predator.
Gotcha.
Because Madagascar is kind of missing that. When we talked about the Fusa episode, we talked about that the largest land predator is the Fusa. Fusa. And it's tiny.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, not tiny, but it's...
Relative to an elephant.
An apex predator?
Yeah.
Where the hippos used to roam?
Right, yeah. And the buffalo.
But no, I mean, there's all... Madagascar has some big animals, big herbivores, and a lot of primates. Are lemurs, but are primates.
Yeah.
But yeah. So in 1954, M. Luvy reported to the forestry office that he had captured this crazy large Fusa that was raiding his chicken coop in the forest of Mordova in the west coast of Madagascar. So the secret coast.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was the east coast. Yeah, the east coast is hard.
But he caught this. So in 1954, they caught an absolutely massive Fusa. This guy did in his chicken coop.
Okay.
You want to guess how big it was? And this is how big the officer, the forestry officer, measured this creature.
6 foot long and 500 pounds.
You're off on both numbers.
Okay.
By a lot on both numbers.
Okay.
Well, not the feet, you're closer. It's 7 feet long.
7 feet, that's pretty close.
And 70 pounds.
70? So yeah.
Oh. Because keep in mind, a lot of that's tail.
Oh, okay.
So it's like a panther. Like we talked about that guy that had to strangle that panther to death.
Yeah.
I think that panther was 70 pounds.
Okay.
Which is still quite capable of killing a person or a cow. Cats can punch way above their weight class when it comes to how big a prey they can take on.
Sharp teeth, sharp claws.
Significantly heavier and longer than any Fusa ever recorded.
Okay.
We're talking amplitudes bigger than any Fusa ever recorded. It has long been thought that the Malagasy people across the island recognized two different varieties of Fusa, which they talked about this when the Antimaba. They said the red Antimaba and the black Antimaba.
Okay.
Which is basically, which the larger and rarer of the ordinary red species. So the normal Fusa is red.
Okay.
And then there's a black Antimaba, which is the giant rare one.
The more secretive one. Maybe that one's hunts at night.
That's probably why it's black.
What if they're the same litter, you know, just one's red, one's black. Diurnal, nocturnal.
Although it is unclear if its difference in taxonomy, it's not merely based on age, gender, or a regional variation. So yeah, the giant Fusa. Guess when they went extinct.
Ooh, so they are extinct?
Now.
Relatively.
This is one of those animals that I think
could still be hanging on.
They said, basically, there was legends into modern day of people seeing these giant Fusa.
Okay.
And they're like, well, there's no Fusa that's that big.
Yeah.
And then they found the bones, not the fossils, the bones of them.
So they're still hanging on.
1500 AD.
Was the last time?
Was with the newest bones that they quote-unquote claimed.
Okay.
With a 500-year like wiggle room each way.
Wow.
So.
That's now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's now.
500 years ago.
Yeah.
The last one died 500 years ago.
Wow.
Ish.
So I think they're still out there.
It's not even a question to me.
Yeah, they're still there.
Yeah, it's the most hidden place on the planet, probably.
One of them, yeah.
Where there's a weird animals like Tenrex and everything.
Yeah.
Yes, a giant Fusa could be there. Because it needs it. It's an ecological niche that's open.
Right.
And a Fusa would make sense to fit it.
Right.
And we already know from the normal Fusas, the small Fusas, their behaviors with people, the second people move into the area, Fusas abandon the area.
Okay. So they know.
So I'm going to assume a giant Fusa that's even more secretive, like a big cat.
Probably more intelligent.
Is going to do the same thing.
Correct.
Humans come in the area. Humans aren't good.
Time to go.
Mm-hmm. And then occasionally killing a cow or, you know, goats or sheep or whatever.
I caught it.
But yeah, often compared with living Fusa, the giant Fusa stood about or out for its size and adaptations. There is no longer, they say they're no longer among us. The legacy lives on through fossils and bones and intriguing the wildlife of Madagascar. Any questions about the giant Fusa?
No, I do wonder if they just kind of filled a niche, if it is the same animal. Like, I wonder if they're just the same.
They probably speciated.
Yeah, exactly. And so it filled a bigger niche.
Yeah, yeah, because it would make sense.
Yeah.
There's a lot of little primates, the lemurs.
Yeah.
And at the time, there were a couple megafaunal species. There still is a couple megafaunal species, but in the last 200 years, a lot of them have been wiped out by people.
Yeah.
But, like, there was literally a giant lemur on par with a gorilla.
Gosh. That'd be awesome.
So what was eating those?
Yeah, something.
Probably giant Fusas.
Something had to have been.
The lemur predator.
Yeah.
It's no prey. There's very few examples when prey can evolve out of an ecosystem.
Gotcha, yeah.
I mean, I can name probably only two.
What, blue whale?
Blue whale and like a titanosaur. And it's only when they're adults.
Titanosaur.
Well, yeah, I mean, because the titanosaur is the family group. It's giant, the giant sauropods.
Yeah, I know. Just a you had to pull a dinosaur example.
And the blue whale. And it's only when they're adults.
Right, yeah. It's when they're out of the food chain.
Yeah. Because, I mean, still when they're young, if
oh, yeah, they're still vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Orcas and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. But there's still giant predators that'll challenge an orca or challenge a blue whale. It's the orcas. Normally, for an adult blue whale, it normally is not good for the orcas. But
no.
There is the chance that they win.
But the giant squid, too, can go after one.
Yes, the giant Fusa is now recognized as a formal species. So, in terms of weight, they think they were about 70 to 80 pounds. So what did we say the one that was caught in 1954?
Was 70 and pounds. 7 feet long. Yeah.
And they get about 7 to 8 feet long.
Yeah, it's about the same thing.
Huh.
Very dead on.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, but the science says.
Well, I just think it's funny that all these native people are like, yeah, there's a giant one, and here's what it looks like. Here's how big it is.
Yeah.
And like, that doesn't exist.
Right, yeah.
And then they discover typical. The bones, and they're like, oh, well, it's dead now.
It's dead now.
It died 500 years ago. And they're like, one just got Johnson's cow down the road.
They're like, yeah, it was probably like 6-7 foot long, 70-80 pounds, probably after the fact, after they found the bones.
Just, I think these guys are great. Yeah. Any questions about the giant Fusa? So the Fusa still is in this group, especially in the 1600s. By the 1800s, the Fusa itself was separated out.
Ooh, does that mean I got like that a half right then?
Yeah, I'll give you a...
Well, that's not it.
Oh.
Wrong nope. page. Keep going, that one. Ooh. Ooh, I got all tingly again.
Ooh. No, so yeah. Half right, like, so that'd be the red Antimoeba.
Okay.
Which is the normal Fusa.
Yes, the smaller guy.
Which I think is so fascinating that in the 1600s, when the governor's talking to these natives, and he's just writing it down. He's just like, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
So the Antimoeba and his several other cryptids, but with hundreds of other normal animals.
Right.
Or documented animals, I guess. And he's just like, so there's two of this? And I think he took their word pretty bluntly. I think the first guy, I don't think he questioned too many.
Yeah.
And then later on, they're like, ah, it's just a Fusa.
Yeah.
Just a Fusa.
Still, a Fusa itself is weird in general. So a giant one is even weirder. That's kind of cool.
Now, this one is one that I don't have a weird name. I guess I kind of do.
What, do I got to get over the airstrip and get off this island?
Yeah. Well, we're actually going just to the neighboring continent, Africa.
Okay, back to Africa.
Back to the Dominican Republic of the Congo.
Ooh, okay.
Where your Okapi was.
Yeah.
And Okele Mbembe. And this is probably one of the scariest cryptids of the Congo.
Oh, okay. That's quite the
and
feat.
I know for a fact we have a couple primatologists that listen to this show.
Yeah.
So there's your hint.
We're dealing with a bipedal hominid. I don't know. No, a monkey.
Nothing I said about that would lead you to that.
A monkey.
Nothing I said about that would lead you to that either.
What'd you say? A primatologist?
Yeah.
Primates? What's the difference between that falls under that?
I mean, yes, it falls under that, but it doesn't mean that's what it is.
Watch. You watch.
With the Congo lion killers.
Ooh.
So these were talked about being bestial ape gorilla, or sorry, chimp gorilla hybrids.
Oh, wow.
That would beat lions to death.
Someone's got to do it.
And the people there in the Congo were like, yeah, it's terrifying.
Don't mess with these guys.
And they're like, is it a gorilla? Like, no. I mean, gorillas are strong and big, and this thing's smaller than a gorilla.
Yeah.
This thing has a bad temper.
Yeah.
And will go out of its way to find fights.
Okay.
Like, a gorilla is pretty much, if you leave gorillas alone, they're going to leave you alone. They're
right.
big, mostly herbivorous primates, apes. These guys are not.
Okay.
These guys are not. They're on par with gorillas. They were often called, like I said, Congo lion killers.
So they hunted lions?
Or silverback chimpanzees.
Oh, okay. I don't think I've heard of these. So they hunted lion?
They would go out of their way just to murder lions.
Oh, okay.
They hated lions.
They didn't even care to eat them.
No, they weren't eating lions. I mean, they may chew on some of them and stuff like that.
Right, but
that was not a food source.
That wasn't, yeah, right.
It was just to go and beat lions to death.
Just got to get rid of them.
So any guesses?
I mean... No, I mean...
The cryptid name is going to give it away because it's the name of them.
The Bunyip?
In Africa?
Oh, yeah, that's Australia.
There is the Congo walrus that we've never done an episode on that I want to.
Gosh, is this another cryptid, though? Like a name? Like another...
You would know this name.
I should feel
it was a cryptid name, and now it's not.
Just tell me.
The Billy Ape.
Oh, a Billy Ape. Okay.
And it was, for hundreds of years, the term Billy Ape was... A cryptid name.
Okay.
I want to make that very clear because we forgot modern day that a Billy Ape was not a real thing, as in a documented thing for a long time.
Okay.
So there's still not a lot known about him. So in the realm of primatology, few prospects are more tantalizing as the possibility of undiscovering a new great ape species hiding in the far-flung wilderness. Some legends, like a real-life like King Kong, waiting to be found. So in 2003, when sensational reports began to emerge from a population of seemingly enormous chimpanzees, silverback chimpanzees, they were called silverback, like silverback gorilla.
Okay.
So they were comparing them. These are chimps the size of gorillas.
Yeah.
rampaging through the war-torn jungles of the Dominican Republic of the Congo. So these were called billy apes, as they became to be known. They were said to be larger and much more aggressive and more prolific tool users than any known chimp population.
Okay.
So for a long time, they're just like, it's just chimpanzees.
Yeah.
But there were certain characteristics that they were saying.
Just different.
Some eyewitness accounts claimed that they looked and acted much more like gorillas. And some even claimed that they were gorilla-chimp hybrids, never before seen by science. So a century of rumors. Legends of... I'm sorry?
Is that even possible? Like a gorilla-chimp hybrid?
Alex, is that possible? Here's a question for you at home.
There you go, at home there.
I'm not a primatologist.
Okay.
I don't think so. I know they've tried to hybridize orangutans and gorillas, and they're very distantly related.
Yeah? Did it work?
No.
Okay.
And I think... I really don't think that they're even in the same family, but I may be wrong on that. Gorillas and chimps.
Yeah, I don't...
Because there's a couple subspecies of chimp, like we'll talk about now.
Right, billy apes.
Or even just distinct species of chimp. So the legend of billy apes, soon discovered, was nothing new. There are strange stories of extremely giant chimpanzees in northern Congo that have been circulating for over 100 years.
Hmm. So this has been around for a while.
Yeah, and then it resurfaced again in 2003 when they were beating lions, when a bunch of people that were shooting at each other watched a chimp beat a lion to death.
Yeah, the Congo is just full of war.
War and monsters.
Yeah.
Ever since the first European colonists, explorer began to penetrate the region in the early 20th centuries. In 1908, the Belgian army officer returned to the Congo with a collection of large ape skulls, he said, were from near a town known as Billy.
Oh, okay. I had no idea.
The skulls were unlike any known ape, much, much bigger than any chimpanzee, with a prominent brow ridge similar to that of a gorilla.
Okay.
So their skulls look like they're halfway between a gorilla and a chimp. A
chimp, yep.
At the time, gorillas had never been seen in that part of Africa.
Okay.
So this is right after gorillas were even discovered. And there was not any legends of gorillas in this area.
Okay, so very secretive.
Yeah. A perplexing curator of the Belgian Royal Museum for the Central Africa cataloged the skulls as belonging to a new gorilla subspecies. He's just like, that's the closest thing they look like. They just have to be it's just a gorilla.
It's going to fall under here.
But they were later reclassified as chimps and then largely forgotten. So after they got more gorilla skulls and more chimp skulls, they're like, well, this is just a giant chimp.
Yeah.
This is not a gorilla. It has some gorilla features, but it's definitely a chimp skull.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense so far?
Yeah.
Especially it's 1908 and the curator's just looking at bones.
Right.
So he's just trying to figure that out.
You can see the difference, but it's got more chimp features than gorilla.
Whispers about billy apes persisted through, carried back to the Congo's wild hinterlands by hunters, explorers, and missionaries. Everybody going to the Congo in this specific area would talk about these different chimps.
Okay.
They'd see chimps all the time and gorillas every once in a while. Not this part of the Congo, but they'd see gorillas in their travels through the Congo.
Right.
And then every once in a while, they'd run into a billy ape and be like, they're monsters.
Something
they're
different.
Bigfoot.
They said something different on a different spectrum.
The Azdan people who inhabited the region had long spoken of two distinct kinds of ape in their forest. The small tree beaters, which are normal chimpanzees.
Okay.
And the much larger, more aggressive lion killers,
billy
known
apes.
As billy apes. Eyewitness reports describe these fearsome creatures growing up to 6 feet tall and weighing over 400 pounds.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
On par with some of our bigger gorillas. Bigger than any chimp and bigger than most gorillas on record.
Okay.
The height, I think, is bigger than any gorilla, but the weight is not. They slept on the ground in gorilla-like nest. And they had a terrifying assortment for attacking lions, leopards, and elephants.
Okay. So they go after anything.
So, yeah.
They don't care.
The only two things that sleep on the ground in this jungle are gorillas and billy apes.
Yeah, that's it.
Because they do not care.
Hmm. Like a honey badger.
Can you imagine seeing an elephant take off running through the jungle being chased by a chimpanzee?
I'd like to see it. I wouldn't want to be close, but I'd like to see it.
It looks like a drunk running after it.
What would it do if it catches an elephant? Like
rip its trunk off?
Like a fully grown bull elephant.
The elephant would win, but it's going to suck.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, their trunks are extremely sensitive. So anytime the fingernails grabs.
Dig in.
Yeah. It would be bad. And it'd probably throwing rocks at it and throwing spears and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, most bizarre, locals claim the billy ape would gather in hundreds at Aries and howl at the rising and setting moon.
That's kind of cool.
Like dogmen.
Yeah.
A behavior never before documented in any ape species.
So these guys are advanced.
So, but it's just been a creature of myth. The Congo's full of creatures of myth, if you can't tell. We keep kind of circling back to the Congo and circling back to Papua New Guinea.
I know, you're really abusing up my airplane miles.
Fast forward to the 1990s, the Billy Ape legend began to attract serious scientific interest. Swiss photographer and conservationist Carl Ammann, on his assignment in the Congo, became intrigued by old stories and ape skulls in museum collections, which is crazy to me. This is before DNA was really big, and they're like, yeah, look, weird look at skull. This,
yeah.
In 1996, he mounted an expedition to Billy to investigate. What Ammann found would astonish him. Around the town of Billy, he collected accounts from hunters at recent encounters with extremely huge, hyper-aggressive chimpanzees that did not only not fear humans, they'd come right at you.
They'd attack you.
They told him that these apes were so powerful that even their poisoned arrows couldn't bring them down.
Dang.
So you talk, yeah, you'll see apes that have like arrows stuck in them still.
Yeah.
They do not care.
Ain't going down.
What Ammann found would, I already read that. Tracking through the forest, Ammann discovered the creature's massive ground nests. They were not hard to find.
Okay.
If you would go where they were huge. Typically, they were 2 to 3 times larger than any chimpanzee nest ever documented at the time.
Okay. So massive. Gigantic, yes.
He took photos of these giant footprints in the mud, measured these enormous dung piles, far bigger than any chimps. Most incredibly, he was photographing one of his trackers brought back what appeared to be a freshly killed billy ape. And this is that famous big monkey big ape that's on a stick in the black and white photo.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's that photo.
That's a billy ape?
That's a billy ape.
Oh, wow, okay. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, it was the size of a gorilla.
They had him stretched out, like, basically so you could see his whole length of his body. But
forever, they said that was fake.
And they have a smaller head, too, for...
Yeah. Mm. It was probably a female.
Yeah.
So males have that giant skull.
Yeah, I know exactly the photo you're talking about.
So in early... eyewitness accounts. I don't know if that... You guys heard that or that made it in, but...
The Dover demon that busted through the door. The Dover demon
busted through the door again.
Don't punch that one in the dust.
In 2000... No, he scared me a couple times.
What?
Like just sneaking up on me?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's absolutely terrified.
You almost turned into dust, huh?
Yeah. Anybody know, don't sneak up on the Great and Powerful Mystery.
You get karate chopped in the throat.
Remember I punched that cup into dust that you were using to defend yourself?
I know, I was drinking from it.
But you scared me.
Yeah.
I never forget when I punched my dad off the back porch with a ceiling fan. Or not a ceiling fan, a box fan.
He had a box fan?
No, I had a box fan I was carrying. And he hid specifically far enough away, he knew I couldn't punch him.
Oh, okay.
And it was before we built that patio, so it was really narrow.
Yeah.
It was just a ramp.
Oh, okay.
For when grandma and my brother
came. Right, yeah.
And he jumped out, and I punched with the box fan, and I knocked him off the patio. Broke the box fan.
Oops.
And eyewitness accounts. In 2002 and 2003, Ammann teamed up with primatologist Shelby Williams to launch a series of expeditions into the in-depth forest of the Billy Forest. Williams, armed with his camera traps and audio recorder, was determined to become the first scientist to make contact with the elusive billy apes. After weeks of grueling treks through the swamps and jungles, Williams finally hit pay dirt. Her small team, moving through the dense stand of trees with a curious sound, made them freeze in their tracks. So keep in mind, you're a primatologist, right? You're looking for probably the meanest primate on the planet.
Okay.
In an area that is full of monsters.
Full of mean stuff already, and mean plants even.
I mean, this isn't like the Australian mean plants.
It's still bad,
War-torn. And then there's lions, leopards, hippos.
Mckelly and Bembe.
Elephants.
Okapi.
You get murdered by an okapi. I don't know what you did.
Well, you were in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Were you stealing its baby? I don't know how you can make one mad.
You ever seen giraffes fight?
It's not a true giraffe. We talked about this.
Oh, still, if it swings that head at you.
Anyways, freezing their track, they heard a hooting call that seemed to be coming from all around them. Ooh. So all of a sudden, they're in a thick stand of trees, and you hear, whoo, whoo, and you know it's an ape, and now they're all around you.
Yeah.
These things that beat lions to death.
Yeah, that wouldn't be fun.
The apes, it seemed, had found them first. Heart poundings, Williams reared her camera up, and the brush began to shake violently. Mere yards away from him.
Oh, wow.
She expected the apes to flee at the sight of humans, like a normal chimp would. But that's not what happened.
They're the bomb rusher?
Mm-hmm. She says this. We could hear them in the trees about 10 meters away. Then four suddenly came rushing through the brush towards me. If this had been a mock charge, they would have been screaming to intimidate us, but they weren't. They were quiet. They were huge. They were coming in for the kill. But as soon as they saw my face, they stopped, stared, and then disappeared back into the forest.
That's odd behavior.
Now, we'll talk about why maybe in a second. I think they may have been expecting something else. Like, they were going to kill him.
Yeah, yeah.
Like she said, like, this was not bluff charges. She's been around gorillas and chimps that do that. They were coming in to murder them.
Right.
Shaken but exhilarated, Williams returned to her close encounters with a wealth of new observations about billy apes. She noted that they are large, with some of the males appearing to be well over 5.5 feet tall. Their face were flat and much more human-like than any typical chimpanzee, with heavy brow ridges reminiscent of that of a gorilla.
Okay.
And most starkly, they had patches of gray fur on their entire bodies, rather than just their backs like gorillas. It was this detail that led Williams to dub them the gray ghost of the forest. So before I continue on, I don't know if it's because she was white and they were expecting to see maybe, you know, Africans.
So it just caught them off guard, maybe?
Yeah. I mean, for an animal, it's a whole different color person.
Right, yeah.
So that's a
whole new thing.
What are you?
Yeah.
Or if they thought it was another troop.
Troop of, like,
of
Congolese.
Billy apes.
Oh, okay. Oh, gotcha.
Like, they were coming in, because chimpanzees are even extremely territorial with other groups of apes. So they were running in to fight another group of apes, and then like, oh.
It's like something it's different.
It's people.
Yeah.
And then they didn't run away. They just
maybe
melted into the forest. Yeah. Like she said, they were not scared, but they were massive. So over the next few years, Williams and her research team managed to habituate several billy ape groups to their presence, allowing over dozens of hours of distinct behavioral observations. They marveled at the apes' extensive tool use, indicating ant-dipping wands. They were over 8 feet long.
What? 8 foot long?
Yeah. And watched in awe as 400-pound males erupted into fantastic charging displays, hurling rocks and beating their chests like a gorilla.
So they get the full show, like like you expect to see.
But there was more. But the more they saw, the more questions arose. Examinations of billy apes' mitochondrial DNA passed down from mother to offspring clearly showed that they were chimpanzees and not a new species. But that's when they looked and acted so different from other chimp populations. Were they a new subspecies, some kind of gorilla hybrid? Was it a astonishing variation of chimpanzee size, appearance, and behaviors, or something that had been there all along, overlooked by science in the Congo Basin? So in 2004, researcher Clev Harkes launched the most ambitious study of billy apes to date. So at this point, nobody knows. They look, they are documented.
Right.
People are confident that they exist.
Right. But nobody knows for sure because we don't
have... Their mitochondrial, their mother DNA, is saying that they are just chimpanzees.
Gotcha. So what's that mean? Speciated?
Now, it could be a subspecies, like they said, a phenotype. That this, for whatever reason, this phenotype, whenever it's triggered, produces giants, aggressives. And there are, I don't know of many mammals that do that, but I can name fish and reptiles and even birds that have different phenotypical children.
Okay.
That, I mean, we talked about northern sunfish, for example, which are right down the road. They can produce two wholly different offsprings. One female can produce two wholly different phenotypical offspring.
Right.
Where one's a giant, you know, river dweller and one's a tiny creek dweller.
Right.
Wherever she ends up, she will produce. So I don't know if it's something like that, but let's get into it. 2004 researcher, Cleet, what?
Huh?
Oh,
nothing. You said, let's get into it. I thought of another show. Shall we?
I don't know what that is.
Oh.
Most ambitious study into billy apes. Over the next 2 years, Hicks and his colleagues associated with logged thousands of kilometers trekking through billy ury landscapes, meticulously documenting every trace of chimpanzee behaviors they could find. Hickens focused his research on billy apes' most intriguing traits, unique and complex culture. Like humans, chimpanzees are not black slates, or sorry, blank slates. They are born with fixed or set or instinctive behaviors. Instead, they mostly learn and are passed down knowledge to offspring, giving rise to cultural traditions that can differ greatly between these populations.
Like different groups of them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Hicks...
That's kind of cool. It's like people. I mean,
yeah, that's what they're saying, that these are just people. They immersed themselves in the world of billy apes. The astonishing depth and diversity of their culture began to reveal itself. Perhaps most fascinatingly was their prosperity for ground nesting. As all other known chimp populations spend most of their nights in high treetops, safe from leopards and other large dangers below. But the billy apes definitely build their beds right on the forest floor, and are seen readily available. Over 20% of their nest hicks found were terrestrial, an unheard of frequency in any chimp group.
Okay.
The billy apes are also most prolific and introverted tool users ever observed among any ape.
Still imagining an 8 foot long stick you're shoving down to an ant hole.
Everywhere Hicks went, he found evidence for their the material culture. Sticks and rocks modified in various purposes and passed down from generations. So they'd have like cutting rocks and crushing rocks that they would use repeatedly and take with them.
Okay.
Like a knife or a tool.
Okay.
They were also a giant ant dipping wand. So like we already said, well over 8 feet long. The chimps would extract aggressive driver ants from their nest. Basically, they'd stick the, and then they wiggle the stick around, and the ants would bite the stick thinking it was a predator, and then they'd pull them out and eat them.
Eat them like chicken on a stick.
Mm-hmm. But they were so carefully to insert these sticks into the tiny holes in the ant without ever breaking it, the stick or the ant holes. No chimp population has been known to use such enormous specialized tools. Even more astonishingly, the billy apes were smashing culture. Hicks found hundreds of rocks and logs that the chimps had used as anvils to crack open hard-shelled fruits and nuts that were not available to other chimpanzees. But the billy apes took it a step further. They were using these anvils to smash open giant African land snails and even tortoises.
Not good.
Something never before seen in any ape. Everywhere Hicks looked, it seemed that the billy apes were dreaming up new ways to exploit their environment like people.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps most controversial was the persistent reports of locals that the billy apes hunt and ate big cats. A part of their diet was big cats.
Man, you know, as scary and aggressive these things are, it kind of sounds like they'd be nice to have around to get rid of some of the big
pests. As long as you don't end up on the menu.
That's what I'm saying. As long as...
I'd rather deal with the big cat than these guys if they don't like you. Hicks himself never witnessed a kill, but he did find chimps feasting on many dead leopards and saw scratch marks on trees consistent with leopards being chased by apes.
Oh, like trying to run up? These guys probably grabbed
him. And being ripped back out of the tree.
Gosh.
So like he said, he's never physically witnessed it, but he's seen about a dozen times them eating a leopard.
Yeah, the evidence that post...
Them eating a leopard. Yes. So could these chimps have been so large and behavioral fluctuated, they turned the tables on their most feared predators, big cats?
Okay.
The more Hicks uncovered about billy apes, the way of life, the clearer it became. It was a chimpanzee population totally unique in ecological and culture, adapt in distinctive environments of the Congo Basin. And yet, for all their peculiars, the billy apes were undoubtedly still chimpanzees. The DNA proved it. Hicks now saw that the billy apes, not a new species or a subspecies, but a powerful testament of remarkable behavior plasticity of chimpanzees.
Oh, okay.
So across Africa, chimp populations are known to vary wildly in traditions. From nut cracking in the west to algae scooping in the east, the billy apes represent something new. A culture so destructive, so revolutionary, it embraces a ground-dwelling, new foraging technique that forces a total reimagination of the possibility of apes and perhaps their earliest hominid ancestors. So basically, as far as we know, billy apes are chimpanzees.
Right.
They are just a type of chimp, a subculture
right.
of chimpanzees. And why they are so big is because they are exploiting food sources that other chimpanzees cannot.
And they're probably getting more protein, more protein.
They're getting more, I mean, everything from nuts and berries to snails to turtles to lions. They're clearing out predation.
You think it's like boosting their testosterone or something?
So I think it's over generations. I don't know if it's boosting testosterone.
Well, I mean, as far as
they're selectively breeding themselves into a new species. They're just not there yet.
Right. So like better, you know, stronger traits, bigger traits.
But they're showing their kids how to use tools.
Right, exactly.
So instantly, they are available to higher sources of protein and amino acids that help with development of muscles and brain activity.
Yeah, right from a young age. Then.
And so like you're saying, it's more of a compounding factor for this specific group of chimpanzees.
Yeah.
So while they are not a new species, they are culturally a new group.
Well, don't you think eventually they would be split into 100%. A new species?
But an unclear future. We don't know a lot. The long civil war endured in the Billy region has made it more accessible and massive new bushmeat trade. People are eating a lot of them.
Oh, gosh, okay.
Suddenly, the forest of billy apes that had ruled and untold generations became hunting grounds for well-armed poachers seeking to feed a growing demand for ape meat in the cities Abuta and Akat.
Ugh.
In 2007-2008, Hicks teams had observed a staggering 34 orphaned chimp infants and 31 carcasses for sale in the region's markets, a rate of killing that could quickly decimate this very small population.
Oh, jeez. That's terrible.
So yeah, the Billy Apes are in trouble. And we don't know. We don't know if they will survive. Their area encompasses a staggering 11,000 square miles.
Pretty big.
So we're hoping that there's just enough space for them to hide out, basically. There's nothing we can do.
Yeah, at this point. I guess their numbers are, yeah, they're fairly low.
As far as I know, there's no Billy Apes in captivity that are Billy Ape culture. Gotcha. Some of the babies have been rescued from bushmeat organizations, but they don't have the culture.
Right.
So it's hard. This is not a species by, it's just like humans. You know, if you have better nutrients, better living, smarter tools and everything like that, if your dad and mom teaches you good things.
Right.
You develop faster, you develop better.
Be better off.
So it's like that. So I don't know. This is one that I think I wanted to talk about. We've talked about them forever. When we talked about the apes on pirate ships.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Silverback gorillas.
Yeah.
Or not silverback gorillas. Silverback chimpanzees were probably Billy Apes that were caught.
Gosh.
So they just chain them up for entertainment.
How dangerous would that be?
As long as you got pretty good chains. Because I think most of the time they just get them drunk.
Oh, fair enough.
So it's just a hammered ape in the corner.
Yeah.
That if you give it a rock, it will kill everyone on the ship if it's not hammered.
Gosh. So they just kept it drunk?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's terrible.
No, it wasn't good. It wasn't a good practice.
No. Cheap. Maybe not even cheap entertainment.
No. All right, we got time for one more.
Let's do another one.
So yeah, the Billy Ape one, I couldn't have let you guess because it's just a Billy Ape.
I wouldn't have guessed it anyways.
It's just a Billy Ape. The Congo lion killers is another one. Here's one. This one's a little shorter. Chilean hippopotamus.
Ooh. Wait a minute. I think I know this one, but go on.
So Patagonian hippopotamus, or Chilean hippopotamus, is a cryptid reported from the Acaman and the Patagonian in South Chile. Other sightings happen in the Chile archipelago, describing traces back to Father Juan Inco Mali in the late 1700s, who noted the mysterious river and lake-dwelling monsters.
Mm.
Furthermore, this is critical, that there are no hippos in the Americas besides the ones Castro released in the late 1900s.
Right.
This is way before there. There was no hippos.
Oh, okay. Well, there goes my educated guess.
It is not a hippo. I'll give you that hint.
Okay.
Not a hippo.
I thought this was going to be one of them trick questions.
It is not a hippo. Not a hippo.
Is it a hippo?
It is. They were searched in the Old World. Other sightings in the Arkema regions in the islands near Chilo. Described as different from African hippos a lot. Similar in the size and shape of pygmy hippos or a small horse. Much, much smaller.
Okay.
1 to 2,000 pounds is what I'd say, which is still a big animal.
Yeah.
But it's not 6 to 8.
No.
1,000 pounds.
Right.
They have webbed, palmed hands, like that of a seal.
Okay.
They have no fur, or the fur that they do have is said to be very little and like that of a young sea lion.
Okay.
Father, like a hippo, you know, just like a little couple of facial hairs, and the babies have a little more fluff than... like
right.
An adult hippo.
Right, right, right.
Father Juan Intigo Malti, a Jesuit priest and naturalist, was one of the earliest Chilean national historians. His Compendio de la Historia Geografía Natural de Civil del Reino de Chile, 1782, contains these accounts. He was not prone to fantasy. He was very staunch in his biological writings. He repeated locals' belief in secondhand testimonies, practically the Machu Picchu and the Hilchin people.
Okay.
So there's not much to this because it may be extinct, but I have the animal that's closest to it that's right next door.
I'm trying to think.
So it was said not to be aggressive. It was a giant herbivore that lived in the waterways. It rarely ever, if ever, came on land. It had webbed hands like that of a seal. So not like these big hoofed feet like a hippo.
Gosh, nothing is coming.
But it was a herbivore. And it was very, very secretive. Giant round back. Its back is really what made it look like a hippo, you know, when they're laying in the water. So it would do those kind of things.
I mean, the gears are turning, but nothing's literally popping. Should I? Okay, give me a little hint here. Is this something I should know? This animal?
Yes.
So I know about it. Okay.
This is definitely one I thought you would get.
Well, okay, my one guess. All right, I'm ready for my guess. I'm just going to go. Probably wrong, but let's go elephant seal.
No.
Dang. So sad to hear.
No, this is a freshwater dweller. They live in a lot of freshwater often. Not a random one-off.
Oh.
But Chile does have, you are right, there is cryptids that are Chilean elephant seals, like getting up in a river once in a while. This, they live there.
Water horse?
Yes.
Okay, closer. Okay, is it a, did we see one this summer?
Yeah.
Is it a water buffalo?
No.
Oh, darn it. Oh, but we seen it?
Yeah. We've seen a cousin of it, at least. It's got the same name.
Oh, gosh.
Did you forget we went to the zoo twice?
Oh, I wasn't thinking zoo. I was thinking animal auction still. Okay.
No, yeah, we did not see one of these at the animal auction.
Okay. A rhino.
No, that's a better guess, but they're also an old world animal.
Okay. Dang, okay. Because we did say
we did have brontotheres, though.
That rhino at the zoo, was that an Indian rhino? That was pretty awesome. He was like right up in the water. He was bellowing in the water right in front of us.
Was he a Java or a Sumatran?
I don't know what that means.
They're just rhinos.
I think an Indian rhino is what it was.
It may have been. That's not. Anyways.
Oh, that's not a thing?
No, it is, but it kind of.
Okay. So it said on the label there. Okay. Back to.
I think
okay.
It was Sumatran, to be.
Okay, fair. I don't know. No, I think you're just going to have to tell me.
The Amazonian manatee.
Oh, just a manatee.
Yes. A giant herbivorous floating blob in the water with webbed hands, like a seal.
Well, that was what part was throwing me off.
It's an Amazonian manatee. I thought you were going to get this one.
No.
We've seen them at the zoo.
I don't remember.
Yeah. So they can swim up to 22 miles or kilometers an hour. Sorry. Their population is between 8,000 and 30,000. We don't really know. They're very secretive. They live to be about 30. They're not nearly as big as like West Indian manatees and Florida manatees and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
The Amazonian manatee. And they're technically not found anymore, at least in the rivers where this were seen.
Okay.
But there's many, many people believe that this is just the they were a dying out population of Amazonian manatees.
Okay.
Or close another on close
their
cousin.
Their way out.
Because Amazonian manatees weren't discovered for a long time. They did not believe there were manatees in the Amazon River.
Okay.
They thought they were just monsters.
Until they found these guys?
Yeah. They are extremely large, aquatic, and bizarrely appearance, first described as a curious combination of seal and hippopotamus.
Okay.
When they first got to the Amazon, they thought they were aquatic hippo, like fully aquatic hippos.
Right.
Because they'd seen the hippos in Africa, and they're like, that's a hippo.
That's the same thing.
It's just not as mean. It is the smallest, though, of this three extant species of manatee.
Okay.
Manatees are often known as sea cows, which they are not. But they're called this because they're slow, peaceful, and herbivorous nature, reminiscent of the bovine.
Is that okay? Okay, it's just because it reminds them of cow's behavior.
Yeah, yeah, because just big, chewing on cud, just relaxing. The Amazon manatee can be distinguished with its smooth, rubbery skin, lack of vestigial nails on its flippers. Manatees have forelimbs modified into flippers, no free hind limbs, and rear of their body is formed a flat, round, horizontal paddle. Their flexible flippers can be used to move along the bottom, scratching, touching, and embracing other manatees, moving food around their mouth and clearing their body.
Mm.
So there's still hands, even though the Amazonian manatee doesn't have nails anymore, fingernails. The manatee's upper limbs are modified into upper lip is in this large bristled surface. The Amazonian manatee has a lot of facial hair.
Okay. Like a wolf or Brimley.
Yes. That they use to, like, it has a deeply divided lip. It can move each side of its lip independently when feeding.
Okay.
So it uses this to pull grass and kind of clear off the sediment and all of this. They're generally gray. Sometimes they have white or even bright pink patches on their breast, but they're mostly gray. They have the most color patterns of any of the manatees.
Oh, wow. Yeah, because mostly all of them are just that gray.
Their teeth are continuously replacing horizontally at their caudal position of their jaw. The rostrum portion throughout the manatee's life. So like we said, they're sliding teeth.
Yeah, I might want to explain that for anyone listening at home.
They have teeth that slide in like a track in their mouth. They'll keep replacing. It's super weird. If you ever get the chance to touch a manatee's jaw, and not a live manatee, like a couple zoos in Florida have it where you can touch their bones and feel just how like dense they are and everything.
Yeah.
But you can actually slide these teeth in like a track.
Which is crazy. And like you, like you've tied it to, that's been the description of some Bigfoot.
Bigfoot is a manatee. Amazonian manatees occur throughout the Amazon basin, North and South America, Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, and Brazil. So not Chile. But there are some people believe there was either a cutoff species or a different species of manatee living there. And they live in mostly freshwater oxbow lakes, blackwater lagoons, and deep connections of rivers with plenty of aquatic vegetation. They're rarely seen in the main stem of any rivers unless they're traveling.
Okay.
Amazonian manatees are generous are animals that occur in big herds. So unlike other manatee species that are mostly solitary, Amazonian manatees hang out together.
Would this like be hippos. Like, you ever seen that video where the that kayaker?
That is 100%. That was Amazonian manatees.
Okay.
That he freaked out and the water exploded.
The water's like thrashing. It looks like a scary horror movie.
Yeah, it's manatees.
Like a ghost.
It's manatees he threw a rock at.
Oh, nice.
That's what he threw in the water to make them all splash.
Not smart.
I mean, they're tiny comparatively. They're not very big. I think they're like 600 pounds.
Still, that video, like if I was in the middle of that, it looked like a ghost was in the water going nuts everywhere.
It's because they're laying on their side and they flash their tail like that.
Yeah. It's just water flinging up everywhere all around you.
But yeah, so these groups are often seen in 4 to 8 individuals, which is very odd for manatees.
Okay.
These manatees are both nocturnal and diurnal and live their lives almost entirely underwater.
Do they even sleep?
Yeah, kind of. Manatees, they sleep like hippos where it's like partial sleeping.
Okay.
It's not like what me and you sleep.
Deep REM.
Only their nose stick out above the water and search for the bottoms of the rivers and lakes for lesser vegetation. An individual one day can eat as much as 8% of their total body weight in aquatic vegetation. Manatees have nostrils, not blowholes, like other aquatic mammals, which close underwater to keep water out and open when above water to breathe. They can remain underwater for extended periods and usually surface the air, if they're not doing anything, every 5 minutes-ish.
Okay.
They can stay much longer underwater if they have to, but if they're comfortable and just eating and going, they'll about every 5 to 10 minutes, they'll come up and breathe. Manatees make seasonal movements depending on flood regimes in the Amazon basin. These floods could have been how they spread out into other areas and got isolated populations.
That makes sense.
They love flooded forests and meadows, and these guys have been seen in farmers' fields during floods, eating all the grass and everything like that.
That's really funny.
So they end up in places, they've ended up in small ponds, they ended up in river systems they are not native to.
How long can they like be out of the water?
A lot longer than a lot of other marine mammals.
Okay.
Like, they're not going to crush themselves like a whale.
Yeah, yeah.
And some species of what we believe extinct manatees have been, there's artist depictions of them actually crawling up on the beaches and stuff like that. If any of the living manatees could do it, it'd be the Amazonian manatee.
Okay.
There's not a lot known about them.
Well, that's why their bellies, you know, got that little hue to it because they're suntanning.
Amazonian manatees vocalize alone and with others, particularly between cows and calves. They're talkers. They're very odd for manatees.
Okay.
Dugongs, sea cows, manatees mostly are solitary, unless they have a calf. Okay. So they are herbivorous, but they do like eating fruit. They're one of the few that can eat fruit, like that get fruit very often.
Yeah, actual fruit, yeah.
They eat a wide variety, though, of aquatic plants. Water lettuce, grasses, bladderwort, hornwort, water lilies are particularly in water hythenias are their favorites. They're also known to eat palm fruit when they fall into the water.
Mm.
Any questions?
These are pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, they're neat.
I don't know how I didn't go to manatee. I think I was stuck on hippo and it being like a mammal or some kind of something with legs, like real 4 legs. So I don't know. I didn't even think of manatee. The little webbed hands.
No, and it's, like I said, this is not fully depicting of what the Chilean hippopotamus could be. I, and many other people believe it is.
Just speculating, yeah.
Yes. Because when they got to the Amazon rainforest, like the Spaniards and stuff like that, they described hippos in the Amazonian rainforest. The Amazonian hippo itself is a hippo, or not a hippo, is a manatee.
Gotcha.
So when they got over to Chile and stuff like that, they were describing hippos again.
Okay, yep.
And I'm going to assume it was just manatees again.
Same song and dance.
They look very, very similar.
Well, especially their backs, like their underwater. Backs
and their faces, I mean, don't look very, I mean, they got big mouths, big heads.
Bristly noses.
Bristly noses. They're just much more docile. If I had to pick any animal larger than me to be in the water with, it'll be a manatee every time.
Ooh, okay. That's a pretty good one.
And I've looked it up before. A manatee has never killed anybody.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one.
And they hug. They actually hug. And they hug for the same reason we hug.
For just, yeah, embrace.
It's not just, yeah, it's not just like grabbing you.
I'm trying to think of another mammal I'd rather be in the water with. But
gosh, no. Some of the other ones on this list are horrible.
Yeah.
The next one that we'll do on the next part, the abath, would murder you.
Okay.
Another water mammal.
Well, there you go. There's a nice little foreshadow.
I'm giving
for
you hints because I'm feeling bad because the ones I thought you would get, you're not getting.
I'm not getting. I'm off my game this season finale. This season wore me down.
This is part three, right?
Yeah.
All right. I've been the Great and Powerful Mystery.
I've been J-Clone779.
We'll catch you next week, guys.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Crypt of the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J-Clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on CryptidsOfTheCorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye! Bye.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.